Welcome to another edition of Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Crystal Palace and Brighton. The rivalry between a bird of prey and a bird of petty theft.
Oh, more like a coastal king versus an eagle stuck behind a Sainsbury's. This week at Brighton, a point at Sellers Park and a clean sheet, second in a row. So is Herslaball starting to pay off?
And this week at Palace, a stalemate at Selhurst, but it's still 12 games unbeaten at home. And Palace won their first major European game under the lights at Selhurst Park on Thursday night.
Plus, we'll go over all the latest club news and preview the upcoming fixtures for both Palace and Brighton.
This is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
Neil, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. What a week it's been.
Oh, it's been a crazy week, isn't it? It's been an absolutely crazy week. Yeah, we've got two games to review from a Palace perspective, one game from a Brighton one. 4 points for Palace, when you look at it like that.
And off the pitch, it's been a mad week for us as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, funny enough, actually, I'm sat in the room with you now and I recognise you from somewhere.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Have you seen me somewhere particular?
There was a guy that looked a bit like you on the news just now.
Oh, you mean BBC South East South Today?
That'd be the one, Neil.
Oh, that was me, actually, yeah. And there was a guy standing next to me on the screen. I don't know if you noticed, but that was you, Andy.
Yes, it was. It was.
TV
yes.
debut.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's been a bit... And not only that, we've had our radio debut as well, live on radio this week as well. Obviously, because of the Seagull Eagle week that we had with Seagull Eagle Day, the BBC got in contact with us, didn't they?
They did. So the Albion Unlimited podcast and radio show on Radio Sussex.
Good old Johnny Cantor.
They got in touch with us and said, do you fancy coming on, boys, and do a preview of the game for us? So we said, yeah, all right, why not?
Checked our diary.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, but, you know, we were available and we thought, why not? And they did a whole, I mean, it was good, what, 20-odd minutes, 25 minutes?
Yeah, and that was actually played, some of you might have heard it actually if you were listening to the game on the radio because that was played just before the game as well.
Just before segments of it, wasn't it? Yeah, that was really good. You actually went and see Johnny Cantor on the day, didn't you?
Bit of a weird experience, Neil. Obviously, where I sit is about four rows in front of the press bit.
Right.
So I kind of straddled a big metal bar. That's not going to translate well, is it?
Hello.
To get over to the other side just to kind of say hi to Johnny because he said to come over and say hello to him. And he was like, wait a minute. And I got the impression he was live on air. So I was like,
Johnny!
Yeah.
Johnny!
And then he kind of looked at me, kind of gave me this excited wink smile thing.
Yeah.
And then handed me the headphones while they were live on air. And who was talking at that exact time I put the headphones on? Me.
Oh, that's surreal.
Really strange.
Wow.
Really strange. Yeah. Look, such a lovely guy and brilliant at what he does. Like, genuine professional.
Yeah.
A lot of respect for him.
It's just been fantastic week, hasn't it? I mean, actually, to be honest, what we should do is plug that. Because if anyone wants to go back and listen to that, Albion Unlimited podcast is actually available on BBC Sounds. So if you want to listen to us again, I mean, I listen to us every night. But if you want to go back, you can actually go and have a listen to that.
And then, of course, it escalated. Because I then get a screenshot from Neil sent through to via WhatsApp from the BBC, but this time asking if we want to do some TV, to which I replied, is this a wind-up? Basically, the local news, BBC South East, decided to do a feature on Seagull Eagle Day, and we ended up being filmed outside our front door, getting into the car, pre the game, after the game. Recording this podcast.
They were here earlier recording our intro and stuff, so when you see it, it'll be us doing it live. It's amazing. Wasn't it?
In this studio. Yeah. So what a crazy day. And also, just to top it off, I'm literally, obviously, guys that are listening, it only aired about 45 minutes ago on TV. So I just sat on my sofa with my kids screaming around me because we'd been on television. And also, my son got a little bit of a cameo, although he does look a little bit like he's about to rob me. Because he's wearing his cap looking like a youth. Just to clarify, he is not. He's a 13-year-old kid.
He's a lovely boy.
A charming lad.
He's a lovely boy.
But yeah, there we go. So my son's had his TV debut as well.
So that's a whirlwind tour of our week before Seagull Eagle Day. I mean, it'd been crazy, hadn't it, really?
Do you know what? The only thing that could have been better...
I know what you're going to say.
It's the game.
Yeah. Yeah, we can gloss over that. Well, no, we can't. We've got to do a whole podcast, really.
No.
Look. I have to be honest, right?
Yep.
We drove up there. Thank you for the lift, by the way.
That's all right.
And I was expecting, well, I think we spoke about it last week, obviously. We did a few previews and we talked about, I remember one particular quote from one of us. I think it was on the Palace side of this podcast.
What did I say?
Said, do you know what, Neil? I'm telling you now, there's going to be goals.
Yeah,
there's going to be loads of goals. At least six, I think is what you said.
Yeah, I unashamedly got it wrong. And mate, I've been taking stick on the side. I don't know if you see. I've been taking stick on the socials this week. So much so, I had to put a gif on the socials of me disappearing into a bush, I think. I normally get it better than that.
You
I'm
do,
not going
to
lie.
Be
but I think all the stats going into the game were telling me that it was actually going to be a high-scoring game. It wasn't. But truthfully, I think it wasn't for two reasons. One, because your keeper was having a lovely day and stopped three of them going in. Mm. And secondly, because your big man got the tactics right for the first time in a while.
I think you're absolutely right there, mate. I think there was definitely some good old tactics coming into this. And
dark arts as well.
Yeah, let's talk. Let's go through it, shall we? Let's go through the game. Let's talk about everything that happened. And I think the first place to start is the obvious place, which is the lineups, you know.
Mm. Oh, before we do that, though.
Oh, go on, what?
There was that bit before the game when we had a drink. We had a drink.
Well, yeah. So,
don't know how to explain this.
Well, this is going to be difficult, isn't it? Right. So obviously, you know, I'm in the away end.
Right.
You're in the home end, but you managed to sneak me into the Palace fan zone. So don't.
No. You sneaked yourself into the Palace fan zone. Don't start getting my season ticket revoked.
No. Fair point.
Yeah.
I managed to find a way to get into the Palace fan zone completely independently and on my own. So I then found you and we had a drink. But while we were having a drink,
of you who go there regularly, where the AstroTurf is in front of the stage in the fan zone, we were literally harmlessly sipping our pints, watching nothing, actually. We were just having a chat. I think the Palace cheerleaders were just taking photos and stuff, weren't they?
They were. The Palace cheerleaders, which in itself surprised me. I didn't know those things still goes on. Yeah. But the Palace cheerleaders were signing and taking pictures with people and stuff. And they were playing music like a DJ and all that sort of stuff. It was a good little party going on.
Yeah.
And then I don't even know how to explain it. All I can say is, if anyone's got an X account, follow Seagull Eagle, check my pinned tweet, because I think that's probably the only way to explain what's going on. Something that I posted was a video of somebody having a good time at the cheerleaders' expense, in some respects, dancing in front of them. I think that's the best way I can say it.
Yeah, but I think you're missing probably the biggest point out of all of this, which is the man was about 107. I genuinely apologise because I don't mean to be disrespectful to this man, but what I witnessed was an elderly gentleman do things that physically he should not be able to do.
Yeah.
And what you'll see on that video that Neil posted was a mere 30-second clip of a good 7-minute epic dance show.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And then, well, all hell broke loose, really, because I posted it.
Yeah.
And it's still going, mate. People have retweeted it, have commented, have sent things, you know, comments like...
Well, go on.
Well, can someone come and get their dad?
Yeah.
You know, things like, I can see your dad's taking the divorce well. I mean, there's lots of different things.
I've had comments saying, I think Neil's a great dancer.
Yeah, there is a similarity. But so far, I think it's hit 127,000 plays from people and
that's
stuff.
So mad.
It's absolutely mad. But look, if you get on X and have a little look, it is funny. I can't lie. But
and apparently, a lot of the Palace fans have said that he's a regular there.
Mm.
And I've been a season ticket holder for years and I go in the fan zone most pre-games. I must have just missed him every single week. So there you go. You bring the crazies out, mate.
So we have had a busy week, then a busy day, and all of that before the game even started.
Yeah, we probably should have just gone home then.
Yeah, we probably.
No, I'm joking. It was actually, no, mate, to be fair, it was actually a good game. It was a good game to watch.
I've seen people online and stuff saying, oh, it was a drab game. I don't think it was drab. I mean, anyone who's got skin in the game, I think it was a good game to watch.
I think anyone that referred to it as a drab draw is someone that sat in an office and wrote it up.
Yeah, fair point.
After watching the highlights.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think they were there watching the whole game.
Okay, so let's go through it then, right? So let's talk about the lineups first of all.
Go on then. How many changes did Brighton make?
Ladies and gentlemen, Brighton and Hove Albion, for the first time in Fabian Hursler's history of being a manager at Brighton, Zero changes. The exact same lineup as last week.
Yep,
that's right. I know, Andy, you're looking shocked and surprised, but...
I'm not shocked and surprised. I'm disappointed.
It took us all by surprise.
That he's decided to find his sanity the week he plays Palace.
I loved it. You know I mean? Loved it. I mean, we said it last week. Of all the times to keep the same team, it has to be this week. There's no injuries. We played well against Leeds. We kept a clean sheet. Why would you change it? And thankfully, he kept it the same. Now, it wasn't completely the same. There were some tactics that were different, but the actual lineup was exactly the same. So from that point of view, I was really happy. So the bench-wise, there was a few ups and few positives, few negatives. Still no Karim Mitoma. My understanding is he is on the grass, he is training again, so I'm hopeful that he'll be back straight away after the international break. Tommy Watson was missing as well, and apparently he just picked up a very small knock in training, so again, he'll be back after the international break. The good news is that Joel Veltman was back on the bench, and I think anyone who understands how Brighton plays will always love the fact that Veltman is around because he always seems to bring an element of professionalism and just experience to the squad in any way. So I was really pleased that he was back on the bench. What about Palace? There were a few surprises, weren't there?
Well, yeah, I remember we were queuing up for our beer and the lineups came out. And I think I stood there for a good 30 seconds with my mouth open. I couldn't believe what I was reading, that Gaye wasn't in the squad. To play that game. We knew he took a knock and it was described as a knock in the Conference League, but it seems that it's a bit more serious than that.
So did he come off at the AZ game? Did he actually come off like limping off or anything?
No. You could see that he was visibly injured, he just carried on. Just like he did at the FA Cup when he ended up with one eye at the end of it. He just carried on. I mean, that's his nature.
So it was a shock then that he wasn't playing?
Yeah. I mean, we all thought he would be and we all knew that it would take a lot for him to not start, if that makes sense. But yeah, he's apparently reports are saying that he basically can't walk at the moment because the pain's that bad. And obviously he's now being withdrawn from the England squad as well. Right, so that gives you some kind of idea. So obviously with Gaye out, Henderson... has taken the captain's armband for the game, which I don't think anyone can argue with. And then JD Canvo, our 19-year-old superstar, getting his first Premier League start in the Brighton game. I mean, that's not an easy task, is it? Let's be honest.
I have to be honest, I was rubbing my hands. I was thinking, this would be great.
Yeah, and bearing in mind, he did come on against one of our Conference League opponents and did make a mistake in his debut with us.
I remember against Larnaca,
So I think it was, everyone was a bit like, okay, this is interesting. And also, don't forget about Gaye's defensive abilities, nobody questions, but everyone forgets what he brings to us going forward.
Right,
How many times he's in the opposition box in a game is sensational. So there we go. JD Canvo, which we'll talk about later, played. And then we had Wharton and Kamada back in the starting 11 after the changes midweek. So pretty much the normal lineup, just with JD starting instead
of Mark. The only other one that I was surprised about was Jeremy Pino as well, because he didn't start, did he? So we were all sort of scratching our heads as to where everyone was going to play.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. I think Pino, I didn't disagree with that, to be brutally honest, because Pino's not known for his physicality, right? He's known for his creativity, but not his physicality. So in a game where we knew we were going to be playing against filthy tackles and elbows and being shoved off the ball and all that kind of stuff, then it's more of a game
To be fair, you've said it the last few weeks, haven't you? Pino is a little bit lightweight at the moment.
I don't know. I don't know whether I said he was lightweight, Neil.
He gets knocked off the ball quite a lot.
That's what I said.
What's the difference?
A bit derogatory, I think, what you said. I think you need to apologise to Pino, please. Jeremy, there's apology coming, mate. Don't worry.
He didn't start, so they knew he was
No, he didn't start, but also to bring a bit of creativity off the bench later on in the game when the legs are tired. And let's be honest, we'll talk about it later, but he nearly won us the game right at the end. I don't think there was any shocks, apart from obviously the Mark Gaye situation. And I would imagine that would have unsettled things, because that wasn't decided, I don't believe, until the weekend that he wasn't going to be playing. So
we get to the game and... let's talk about that first sort of 10 minutes, because I think First of all, the first 10 minutes was quite exciting. There was quite a few sort of opportunities, I thought. It was very open, the very first sort of 10 minutes, a lot of rushing around, obviously. But I also thought, oh, hang on, this could be like a proper, you know, end-to-end game. This could be what Andy's been talking about all week. This could be any scoreline. Well,
after the first few minutes, Neil, I was thinking to myself, I've got this right.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
This is the game that I thought I was going to see.
I felt the same way, actually. And there was two really good opportunities for both sides at that point. And I think it was literally 8 or 9 minutes in. Gomez had an opportunity in the box, first of all, where the ball sort of just came out a little bit to him and he dropped and he went to hit it. He sort of like a little stinger shot. But Henderson, to be fair, made a really good save.
He did.
And then the other side of the coin was literally like a minute later, Saar gets free in the on sort of the edge of the halfway line sort of area and tries to...
Played in Mateta, didn't he?
Yeah, it was really good, you know. But those were the first sort of few minutes and I was thinking, great, this is going to be a fantastic end-to-end game. And then it started to just start to slow a little bit and you felt like the midfield was the bit where everything was sort of starting to happen.
Yeah, what it felt like was that no sooner had each of us had kind of got started and found the momentum, there was a nudging off the ball, there was a bit of afters, there was a trip up, there was all the other bits of
disruption.
Yeah. And truthfully, and look, please don't get me wrong here, mate, I'm not crying foul, I'm not calling the referee out or anything like that.
But here he goes.
I do believe that he had an intention at the start of this game that he wasn't going to slow the game down.
Oh, I agree with you.
He wasn't going to reach into his pocket.
He let a lot go in that first 30
minutes.
Too much,
to be brutally honest, I think. Too much. Well, put it like this. Mm. Too much for a Palace fan. For a Brighton fan, I think you probably think he managed it perfectly.
I think we probably got the little better of the decisions in the first 30 minutes.
Well,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't think you even got the better of the decisions. I think you just you got the advantage of him not making any. Does that make sense? And I'm not even being a joker about it because I think we did talk about it yesterday, and you kind of agreed with me that I think him letting the game flow benefited you more than it did us in them early stages.
But I think that's also because of the way Palace play. You want set plays. You want to slow the game down. You want to counter-attack.
Well, yeah. And also, we wanted to get you down to 10 men. Because if he had got his cards out in the first half, you would have ended up with about 9 in the end of it.
I mean, ridiculous. That's what you got VAR for, Andy. They're refereeing the game as well. So if he didn't blow up, VAR would have stopped the game and said, that's a red or that's a... You know. So you can't just say...
If you believe that...
I do believe that.
Well,
I think VAR...
Sit and watch the replays, mate. Tell Adam Walton that, who's got one rib missing.
No, please.
Anyway, look, I think you're right, though. It was a very, very tight game. Clear chances for me. I think probably the best way to describe this at this point in the game was clear chances were at a premium,
yes,
right?
Yeah, fair point.
However, there were some clear chances. Mm-hmm. Two for Palace at the beginning, one for Brighton. Mm-hmm. And then they're probably, I would say, a very good chance was when Welbeck played in Minte.
So that was right, yeah, just before half time. That was probably Albion's best chance, I would say, of the whole game. And I think it was Gomez who robbed Wharton sort of in possession just as he was trying to turn and move forward. And he sort of drove forward, slipped the ball through to Yankuba Minta. But for some reason, he wanted to, well, I know the reason why, he's only got one foot. He wanted to try and hit it on his left. So he's sort of like, he's contortioning his body round to try and hit it sort of round to the far post with his left foot. And he just gets it all wrong because he's unbalanced. Why he doesn't just try with his right foot, actually give it a hit, I don't know. But yeah,
I just don't even know. I don't know how he managed to do that so badly. And don't get me wrong, there was a couple of situations like this for Palace as well. So I'm not digging him out. But it was a real big kind of lack of composure from my side. I don't think he was under that much pressure at that
time.
That. He should have. We should have made it 1-0. That should have been the 1-1.
Yeah. He was just trying too hard to get around the ball to try and hit it with his left. If he'd just run onto it and hit it with his right, you don't know what would have happened, you know. But he doesn't trust his right foot, and I think that's going to be a problem unless he does something about it. You know, all the great players. Yes, I know they're all great left footers or right footers and one footed, but they know when they have to use their other foot, and that was an occasion where Minte you had to look. Just before we move to the end of the first half, I did want to pick up on a few tactical things, if that's all right, especially from Fabian Hörsler. We sort of said at the beginning about, you know, the lineups and some tactics and things, and I think the one thing that was really clear was, although Fabian Hörsler picked the same starting 11, he had some really key points that and tactics that he'd highlighted, obviously, to the players. There were probably three things in particular, and they were the three main threats, I would say, of Palace. So if you think about Gomez, for instance, Diego Gomez, playing on the left wing, he was clearly given the job to do an absolute man-to-man job on Munoz. He was with him everywhere he went, up and down constantly. And he was very defensive-minded. So whenever Munoz was going, that's exactly where Gomez was going. And he did really well, to be fair, trying to keep with him as much as possible. The other one that was going on was Ferdi Cadioglu, who, although he was playing at left back, was following Saar all over the pitch. And Saar was trying to pull him away on purpose, but they'd worked it out at Brighton. You know, he was following him wherever he went, and the hole that was being left was either being filled by Ayari or Minté was coming back. So he
The tactic was to follow him. I think the tactic was to hold on to them.
Well, yeah, but my point being, I mean, he was trying to make sure that Saar wasn't going to get the ball, so he didn't give him any space. So he was following around. As soon as Saar got to the ball, he was getting kicked or he was getting pushed off the ball. And that was the tactic. And then the final one, I would say, was somebody who I've have bemoaned over the last few years, Lewis Dunk. He stuck to Mateta like glue. I mean, he was literally just trying to stop him from bringing any of those balls down that he does so well, obviously, to then start the playoff for Palace. I thought he did really well trying to battle for those sort of those high balls and that defensive sort of ability to stop Mateta from getting hold of the ball, I thought was excellent. And they were sort of the three really clear sort of tactics you could see on the pitch.
Yeah. I think the biggest tactic that you guys played, which just frustrated us greatly, was that it was the niggling, it was the pressing, and you weren't giving us much time on the ball at all. I think you were winning the second balls in midfield. Mm. You were winning a lot of the aerial duels from the long balls, which was frustrating as hell to watch, which is why Mateta couldn't get into the game too much. And the referee wasn't stopping the game. Mm. Which meant that you kind of got the, I do believe you got the better end of that deal, as I said, at the first half. So, funny enough, actually, every still picture I've seen of this game so far, you know, the motion pictures where the footballers are kind of mid-flow?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a Brighton shirt and a Palace shirt. Mm. Pretty much every picture I've seen on every news website has got the Palace player's shirt being pulled by the Brighton shirt. And by the way, I'm not saying that that's why you won the game or any of that, because actually the dark arts are what it's all about, right? Yeah. In terms of that's how to win a game. But I think that just proves that you guys were actually up for it for this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was a real, you could see the mentality in them, and there was a very clear direction, maybe more of the legacy players, I would say, that have been at the club a while, maybe saying to the players this week, of all weeks, you've got to be up for this. Mm. You've got to be stronger. And there was an element, let's be honest, there was an element of bullying going on the pitch.
Yeah, there was. And that's why I was disappointed that because I actually think if we'd have had any other referee on that game, we could have had a different result. I genuinely believe that. So, yeah, I think if the cards had... What?
No, I'm just. I just think it's a bit of sour grapes. I think.
No, it's not sour grapes.
You
are,
because you're saying if this had happened and if that had happened. Look, the referee decided to play on the Palace players just weren't strong enough. Bottom line.
I think you're misunderstanding, Neil. I think the referee and his approach to the game is as much a reason for the outcome of the game than any of the decisions that were made on the pitch.
But surely we want referees to let the play just happen, don't we?
Well, it's all called if it benefits you.
We moan so much when referees pull up and blow the whistle all the time and stuff. It's so much better when the referees just let the game flow.
What,
surely?
Let fouls go unnoted?
There were not that many fouls. Come on.
Mate, I think there was plenty going on there, and mostly from your side. If you have a look at the stats on yellows and fouls committed, my friend, you'll see that. What I'm not saying is that you shouldn't have done that, because that is actually a really good way to beat Palace. It's just a shame that you had to stoop that low and you couldn't do it from a tactical or a talent point of view.
So let's move on to the second half then.
Didn't disagree.
Before you start crying. Look, so we got to the second half and same old, really. Most of the second half, you know, end to end in the sense of the odd counter attack, but most of the players in the middle of the pitch. Brighton trying to keep most of the possession. I think the first thing that probably happened was about 10 minutes after the half time, after the second half started, when this time it was Wharton, I think. He robbed Carlos Baleba. Mm. And then I think it was Saar tried to have a go, got it into the box. And it was just a bit of a melee in the box. It was under people's feet, wasn't it?
He beat Willie. Look, he skipped past Dunk, made him look like an old man, crossed it low and hard, and then Kamada,
who's still yet to score a goal for Palace.
Oh, is he? Yeah. I didn't know that. I mean, well, looking at that, I probably would explain, see why now.
This season, right, fires it over the bar. So the frustration is, again, we do all the hard work. We do all the hard work and get the ball metres away from the goal. Mm. And all you want is just someone to smack it in.
Yeah.
That was really frustrating. Yeah. And then obviously you had a chance, didn't you? Because obviously Minter crossed it in and found Weaver at the back post as well.
Yeah, that was there as well. I mean, there was a few of those sort of half chances, you know, that didn't quite materialise absolutely crystal clear. That is until, obviously, the big event of the whole match, probably the biggest talking event, which was, I think it was around the 60th minute, where Jorginho runs into the box and is obviously scythed down under a horrific tackle from Canvo. It's fine, Andy, I'm joking.
I know, I just couldn't find that bit on the game because it didn't happen.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. Let's talk about the VAR moment. Jorginho goes into the box. It's a good little run. He tries to get past some defenders. And then, let's just say, he hits the floor. The referee decides that he thinks he's seen a penalty, points to the spot, and everyone is all scratching their head a little bit. Brighton, obviously, we're all going mental, going, yay, we've got a penalty. This is going to be it. 1-0 to the Albion. And then, obviously, you hear the VAR come up, and we wait to see what's happening. I mean, my first view of it, it looked like a penalty, because from where I was standing, obviously, you know, you don't see much. Obviously, the ref was closer. He even thought it was a penalty.
Well, there was three Palace players around him.
Yeah, it looked like something, didn't it?
That's the point. And that's why your man decided to take a run and a jump.
Yep.
And I think, do you know what? Here's the truth. It's embarrassing, Neil. It's embarrassing. And the look on his face when he heard what the referee had to say afterwards was something of beauty for every Palace fan, because if you're going to win it, you try and win it fairly, right? Mm. And that is, and I believe that there should be immediate one match bans or something like that for that kind of behaviour going forward.
I do honestly agree with you there. Yeah. I wish there is something like that. They tried to do the yellow cards and they don't always give them out. I think you're absolutely right. I think that's one of the worst things in the game.
Get it
at the
out
moment.
Of the game.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Get it out of the game. Sack him. And do you know, do you know what, actually, it's a very important part of this pod, actually. Mm. So what we probably should do, if that's okay with you, Neil, let's just re-listen to what the referee said live on the pitch.
Because
he had the mic on, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Let's just listen to exactly what he said, because I just want to hear some of the details again.
Okay, here we go.
After review, Brighton number 10 initiates contact with Crystal Palace number 23 and launches himself to the ground faster than his club's European hopes. My final decision, no penalty. Free kick to Palace and a yellow card for disgraceful theatrics. The referee rules it disgusting, desperate and deeply Brighton.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's exactly what VAR said, Andy.
Might as well have, mate. I think, do you know what? Truthfully, on the socials, even the Brighton fans are appalled at that behaviour.
Hey, hands up. Terrible. Terrible dive. I don't want it in the club. I don't want it while our players doing that either. And yeah, you're right. The Brighton fans are all the same. We're all the same as you in that sense. No one wants to see it. It's just stupid. You know, he had a crazy second where he thought he was going to do something. And it's just old fashioned. People forget, I think, that there's VAR in some respects sometimes in the heat of the moment. He just went and did something.
Do you know what he did?
I haven't seen him dive before, to be fair to him.
Well, no. Do you know what? I don't think he intended to run up and take a big dive forward and go, he got me.
No.
What he tried to do, Neil, but this is the funny thing about it all. He tried to do something clever and failed miserably. He tried to wrap his leg around Canva.
He's expecting a leg. He's expecting someone to come out and push
it. Palace.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah, like, I get it.
He let a 19-year-old debutante get the better of him.
Yeah, like, so look, hands
Shame.
Up. Absolutely. And let's be honest, the right decision came about. VAR made the right decision. So no penalty. And we move on with the game. And to be honest, I think until we get to sort of 80 minutes, it was very much same old, same old. Brighton trying to bully the Palace players. Palace not getting that many opportunities. Brighton with all of the ball, but not doing too much.
I don't know, Neil. I feel like you watched a different game to me.
Oh, yeah.
And quite a lot of the Brighton fans I spoke to watch a different game to both Sky Sports, BBC Sports and all of the other media outlets.
Well, we were there.
I think a lot of the Brighton fans have looked at the stats and gone, oh, we had the best position and we had similar sort of chances.
If Why do we talk like that? We don't talk like that, Andy.
That was a generic voice.
Was it? Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
But I think that we did have some really, really good chances and the better of the chances in the game, to be brutally honest. I think that if you look at what Hörsler said and he was like, we controlled the game, blah, blah, blah. I think he's a little bit deluded in that respect.
Oh, he's a very good publicist.
I think if you look at it, I mean, look, there's 53 minutes at Palace's best chance when Walton pressed Belaba, who had an absolute stinker of a game, by the way, and won the ball. And he passed it to Saar. He got caught in between his feet, as it has done for the last four games in a row now. Seems to kind of juggle balls between his feet, not quite understanding where it is. Beat Dunk in the box again. Crossed it low and hard. And it was like, there was a really, really good opportunity there. And then there was more. There was Kamada's drive at goal later on, hitting the side netting when half the stadium erupted thinking he got it in.
There was a lot of hitting the side netting in that game, wasn't
there? Then there was obviously the late rush with Pino, and there was two more as well.
Yeah, look, we'll get to the Pino one.
And you have one chance in between all of that.
We did, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. At quality of chances, I think the XG, I think you've got double the XG that Brighton did on that game. So I totally understand your point. All I was trying to make the point is that really, when you look at the actual opportunities, they were few and far between when you talk about shots on target through the game.
Yeah.
I think Brighton had the most of the possession, which was always going to be that way unless they completely changed their style. Palace were obviously waiting for the counter-attack. Absolutely, natural style. I think the last 15 minutes of the game, Albion had about six corners. They put the pressure on and there was lots of melee in the penalty box, people pushing each other, falling over, all that rubbish. And we were putting the pressure on, but we didn't really create any, you know, golden chance to score. It was just lots of pressure, but not really any specific chances. And it isn't until you get to literally the last 2 minutes of the game does the next big chance turn up. And just before we talk about that, there was just one other point I wanted to make, which was Hörsler making a few changes in the last sort of 15 minutes of the game. I was actually, as a Brighton fan, I was really impressed with him making the decision to put on some of the younger kids back on. So Kostoulas came on, Simas came on. In a big game like this, I was really impressed with Kostoulas when he came on. He came on for the, I think, 75th, 76th minute, something like that. And I was really impressed with his coolness in the situation and really trying to calmly play football. So I was really impressed with that. Veltman came on the pitch, obviously, with about 10 minutes to go as well, for the, you're absolutely right, under par Belaba. The one thing I wanted to pick up on about that was that finally, Andy, do you know what happened when Belaba went off? Veltman comes on to right back and Weaver, our central defensive midfielder, who's been playing right back for 78 years, actually played the last segment of that game at central defensive midfielder. I must have thought it was his birthday or something. It was so lovely to see. I was so pleased for him. And I'm just hoping that now we've got a fit Veltman going forward, we may see that more often. But anyway, look, I digress. The Veltman substitution also caused an issue because when he came on, he was kicking people, he was pushing people. And this last opportunity for Palace comes from Joel Veltman tackling Tyrick Mitchell and it creates a free kick. Now,
which was a miracle because when that ref awarded that free kick, and I think he got a card for that, the stadium erupted.
Terrible, never a yellow card. He got the ball.
Yeah, but I think the point being is that he gave the yellow because of the three that he didn't.
Yeah, maybe.
Before. And this is what I'm trying to say, that I think if not him specifically, but if a lot of them cards had been produced in the first half, it would have changed the game. And that's why the referee style is important in these derbies when it's so tight. But anyway, but yeah, and it was a brilliant opportunity that was risen by that with Pino having this brilliant effort at the near post. And I think I count that by this point, that's three clear and distinct saves that your keeper has made. And this is what I don't believe the big media outlets have picked up on this game. The more I've looked at it and played it back, and I haven't just watched the highlights, I've watched the game. And your keeper made three distinct big saves in that game. As the last man between, you know, the ball going in the back of the net, if it weren't for him,
yeah,
mate, I work it out. If it weren't for keeper saves, we would have won that 3-1.
I mean, it was a fantastic save. Honestly couldn't believe he was where I was sitting. Obviously, in the away end, you sort of that angle, you could see Pino, his shot, and it was. I was thinking, oh no. You know, it was low, it was driven, it was going right into that corner.
Well, it was curling leftwards as well.
It was
right?
a really good hit, to be fair.
He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
Because also, he was pretty much unmarked at that point. And
we're talking like 90 seconds before the end of the game, not even that. And it was fantastic. And the save was just even better than the shot. It was just epic. I couldn't believe he got down there in time and had a strong enough wrist to actually stop the ball and get it out. So,
well, I think a lot of the reason that your keeper had a good game, and this isn't detracting, I promise you now, it's not detracting from his skill, but I think a lot of the reason was because of your defence and the way that you were playing forced us to take shots outside the box.
Fair point.
And further away than we normally would have. So I think we couldn't get as close as we normally would have, and we couldn't win the aerial duels to score our normal type of goal.
I agree. So look, a few stats. Let's look. Finished 0-0. Few stats. I talked about a little bit like the XG. So Crystal Palace got an XG of 0.74. Brighton's was 0.38. So as I say, about double Crystal Palace in that sense, in the sense of quality of chances. Shots on target, 2 for Palace, 3 for Brighton. Touches inside the box, very even. Again, that's the one I always look at to sort of see how games go. 30 to Palace, 28 to Brighton. But I think one of the really sort of clear stats that was very different, which I think was one of the clear tactics for Albion, was that crosses, Palace only managed 11 crosses. Brighton, 26. They were very clearly trying to get wide outside of that back three that you've got, you know, and trying to get the ball in. So that was very clear tactic. The other one that you mentioned earlier, yellow cards. So even though we were so dirty and bullying, we managed 4 yellow cards still by the end of it. So the ref did do his job.
Oh, he started that in the 60th minute, I think, though.
But they always do that, though, don't they? They always sort of just wait and wait and wait. It is a bit ridiculous. Mm. So look, overall, how do you feel about the game as a sort of a summary? How are you feeling? Straight after the game, how did you feel and how do you feel now?
I felt disappointed straight after the game because I wanted it to be a success story. I wanted to... Look, don't forget, Palace could have ended up in fourth if we'd have got 3 points out of that game. I felt, while I was watching it, that we probably did enough to win that game. When I watched it back, I know we did enough to win that game. And I also think that you were up there with the teams that have played the best at Selhurst Park this year. It's true. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm comparing you to Sunderland and Brentford.
Liverpool?
No, because they didn't play very well at all. It's not about the quality. No, I'm not talking about the quality of team. I'm talking about how they played, Neil.
No, okay.
And there's a you know as well as I do, right? There's a distinct formula that there's things you've got to do to beat us, right?
Yes.
And necessarily you can get Man City turn up to our ground and not beat us if they don't play the right system. Mm. And you did find a way. I think from our perspective, Neil, we had 7 matches in 22 days. Right, 7 matches in 22 days. So that's 1 in every 3 days, right, when you think about it, over the last 3 weeks, right? We looked tired, we lacked the edge, and we had the whole, we still haven't won a game after a European game midweek.
So I was going to ask you about that, right?
But before you do, though,
go on.
Just quickly, we lacked the edge because of our 7 matches in 22 days, right? And we looked tired in that second half. What was your excuse?
What do you mean?
Well, because you also looked tired in that second half. You couldn't find the breakthrough. You couldn't find that edge to beat a tired team. And you tired yourself.
I think, in all seriousness,
That's the bit that you could have done better.
No, well, obviously.
You didn't take advantage.
It would have been nice to have scored a goal. Absolutely agree with you there. But I think what I was looking at was a team that was concentrating so hard on keeping a clean sheet more than trying to score a goal, which I am actually personally very happy about, because it's something that we've been talking about for such a long time, is that, you know, goals win matches, but clean sheets wins championships. Yeah. Now, we're not going to win the championship, but my point being that we are
hopefully building something more. And to have a team that was, you know, really concentrating on keeping a clean sheet, defensively, man-to-man marking, all that sort of stuff, tracking back, I think that's why they were completely knackered by the end of it, because they'd worked so hard tactically and physically. So, I get your point, but...
We still outrun you, mate, on the stats.
You did, yeah, absolutely.
And we were tired.
No, I agree. But the reason you outran us is because we had 58% of the possession, or even more than that, I think we might have had. But, you know, it was a game where we were keeping the ball as much as possible and you were running around trying to get it. But as soon as you got the ball, we were having to get... See, this is the thing I've been talking about for weeks. It's like our transition. So when you were getting the ball, tactically, we were working so hard to make sure we were back into the right positions that we needed to be at. And it was a much better performance this week, I thought, than a nil-nil really shows on the stats. So, look, I get your point, mate. I mean, I think one of the things I was going to talk about before we finish this is to say, you know, well, first of all, I think I was sort of similar to you, that straight after the game, I felt like, oh, Albion should have won it or something. Because in my head, I'm watching it with an Albion hat on, obviously. Yeah. But then on reflection, I think you're probably that a point is about right, I would say. And I think, as I said, the most impressive thing to me was the work rate of the players and their tactics. Another clean sheet is just amazing. The fact that we've got two in a row now is brilliant.
You've doubled your amount.
Well, exactly. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just really pleased about that.
Yeah. Just before we do finish, though, because I feel like it'd be a disservice to have talked about this game without mentioning two people from Palace.
Oh, okay.
Because,
go on then.
I think that there was two people who genuinely had the game of their life. First was Tyrick Mitchell, who I think should have had a shout for the England squad, being in his position as well. I think there's actually a need and a requirement for him in the England squad.
He's too tired to play for them, mate.
Mate, he's fine. I'll tell you what, you say too tired. Listen to these stats, right? The first player to win possession 12 or more times, to win 12 or more duels in any Premier League game this season. Right,
pretty
he
good.
Had Minte in his pocket, and he did. He absolutely,
didn't have
mate.
Him in his pocket.
He did. You watched the game again.
Oh,
his
my
anticipating
God.
Skills.
Where was he when Minte had that shot?
Watching him absolutely smack it to nowhere.
So he wasn't anywhere near him. Didn't have him in his pocket, did he?
Anticipating skills was second to none. He had more touches, 89 touches, than anyone else on the pitch. More tackles completed, 8. More fouls won, 4, than any Palace player, and completed 4. Long through passes. He was brilliant, mate. He was really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think he was part of the reason why we managed to nullify any problems that we had with you.
Okay.
And then the other one is, look, Canvo, 19-year-old kid, he came on in the first few minutes. I think we talked about this in the car on the way home.
Mm.
I wasn't happy in the first few minutes.
No, he looked a little nervous, which is understandable.
I think the word to describe that would be shaky, Neil. He was shaky, all right? And I remember Chaddy Riyad being like this in his first couple of minutes,
buying
for us.
But Andy,
yeah,
after those first few minutes,
mate, he sprung into life.
Even I have to say, he played really well.
He was superb throughout. Real confidence, composure. He's big and physical, but he's quick, right?
Yeah.
And he's got the ability to backtrack. And the way that, like, Minte and a couple of the others sprinted past him because they were in a more forward position, and he completely overtook them and managed to get a real big foot in, even from behind, say, for example. It was really, really impressive. He had 90% passing accuracy on his debut.
Yeah, he did well.
Right?
He did well.
First in the ranking for Palace for clearances and headed clearances, 67 touches, second for Palace, and 18 forward passes. So that just shows you that... everyone says, what happens if Gaye goes? Actually, there is a decent replacement.
There's an argument there.
Ready and waiting.
Yeah, I get you, mate. I absolutely get you.
Yeah?
Fabian Hörsler, right, after the game, he obviously, everyone gets interviewed and stuff. And he was happy with the way that the team played. He was a little unhappy with not getting 3 points, as you said earlier. But I think that's just him, you know, waxing lyrical about his team. And, you know, I don't blame him. He tries to always spin the positives. But the one thing he did talk about, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, he was talking about the time it takes to do long throws now. Because this is now this new tactic where everyone's bringing long throws into it. And he wasn't specifically moaning about Palace. He was saying on a more general point. I think he said, let me just get the quote right. He said he complained about the length of time it takes for each throw to be taken. He said it stops the rhythm. He said that to Sky Sports. He said it takes so much time to throw, too much time. We need another rule because it's always like a minute. I hope we can find change. We restrict time with goalkeepers now to 8 seconds. That's good. So maybe we should look at long throws too. What do you think about that? The whole timing of these long throws.
I think it's abundantly clear that Brighton haven't got a good enough long throw taker and that that's not a tactic he wants to go with.
I don't think it's a tactic we want to go with because we want to play football, mate. We don't want us to hurl the ball in. But we did actually try, I noticed, in this game with Ferdi Kalioglu tried a couple of times.
He did try.
Mate,
I think you say that, though. You say you want to play football. I think that the long throws bring another level of excitement. And it's like another set piece. And if you look at the skill and the aerial brilliance that has happened in some of the goals that we've scored. This ain't like watching Stoke in the 90s, mate.
It is.
No, it's really not.
It's exactly the same. Arsenal were doing it. Brentford are doing it. It's horrible. I hate it.
I mean, mate, we won an FA Cup and a Community Shield with it, so...
But more to the point of his point around the time it's taking and this whole dead ball sort of like we're losing time in the game. That is a frustration for fans, isn't it?
Look, I don't disagree with that at all, but I think just throw-ins, even if they're not long throw-ins, is frustrating as hell anyway. And I think a lot of the... I do believe there should be a time limit. I don't disagree with him on that. Mm. I think that he's actually common sense.
Yeah, I agree.
The whole kind of having a towel thing and wiping the ball down and all that kind of stuff. Again, it's a little bit much. I think there was a game this week, wasn't there, where the advertising hoardings were pushed in.
Yeah.
So there's certain tactics that are now being deployed. I think it adds another level of excitement. I really do.
Fair enough.
So,
I can see both sides of it. A couple of things just to finish up then before we finish for the end of the half of this podcast. Mm. Some season stats I was looking at this week just to see how we're doing, both teams and things. And something I came across was quite interesting. So when you look at set piece stats for the season so far, right, Palace, mm-hmm. they are currently second in the league for set piece goals. Yep. Right, so they're doing really well with scoring set pieces. But when it comes to defending set pieces, mm-hmm. Albion are actually number one. They've conceded the least goals from set pieces this season, which for any Albion fan listening to this would say that's a real shock. We got a set piece coach in the summer, a new one, and it's obviously making a difference. We're starting to understand what we should be doing. And to get to this point in the season, I know we've conceded goals, but actually to only have conceded one set piece goal, I thought was quite a positive. And for Palace to be second in the league.
Does that mean that the majority of your goals were conceded through poorer methods?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Individual errors. But for as a Brighton fan, the amount of times and frustration we lost goals from set pieces over the last few seasons.
No, you did lose a lot last year.
Exactly.
And mate, I think that is great progress. Isn't it? It's absolutely great progress.
And we're not doing too badly in the stats for the scoring either, just so you know. We're only about two behind Palace. But I was just making the point that shocked me when I read it, and it was quite a surprise. But look, ultimately, we're in a position now where after that game, it leaves Albion in 11th on 16 points.
Bottom half of the league.
But only one loss in the last seven Premier League games, which is progress. Two clean sheets, obviously, as well. Palace... in the top 10 at 10th mm-hmm. on 17 points.
Yep.
There is one last sort of comment that I would ask like your opinion on though, right?
Yep.
So when I was looking at that and I was looking at the stats and the form, what that has meant at the moment is that in the Premier League, Palace only have one win in their last five games. And I'm just wondering, like you've sort of touched on it earlier a little bit, do you think the toll of all these sort of games are starting to catch up with you and your smaller squad?
I think that you've manipulated the stats in favour of your question.
Thank you.
Because we've won three out of our last four games and drawn one in all competitions.
Well, I'm not talking about competitions. I'm talking about Premier League.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is that we are actually a team on form.
Win in the last five in the Premier League is not form, is it?
In the Premier League,
yeah.
Right?
So you're not in
form. How many did we draw? How many did we draw of them?
Two.
Right. Okay. So we've lost two out of five.
Yeah.
Right. So that's
one
a
win
more favourable stat, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying you've got one win in five.
And I'm saying we've lost two in five, right? So do you get what I'm saying? It's all according to how you look at it, right?
Yeah,
it's
and I'm looking at it this way. So,
and,
okay, look.
And we haven't lost a home, game in 12, right? In the Premier League, right? So there's many stats that you can say. What you want me to say is actually the truth, right? The truth is that what happened to many a team in the Premier League since, you know, the wheel was invented is happening to Palace, which is that we haven't won a game after a European game.
Mm.
And like I was saying to you about all of them games that we played, 7 matches in 22 games.
Yeah.
I mean, 22 days. It's mad. Absolutely mad.
It is.
So how the hell you're expected to do that? And also, to your point about the size of our squad, right? We have players on our bench that are capable of playing. I think my point is that Glasner's style, and has been, not just for Palace, but for the previous clubs that he's played, he wants a tight-knit squad. He wants the same 13, 14 players to play 50 games in a season.
I just don't think that's viable, mate.
But that's how he's done it in the past, and that's how he's won things.
He hasn't done it in the Premier League, though. It's such a different league.
He hasn't. No, mate, he hasn't. But what I'm saying is that that is his tactic. Mm. So I don't think Glasner, even in the summer transfer window, when it was open, and he was asked how many more need to come in, he's like, only two or three, only two or three. Mm. So I think, you know, there's this kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess drive for you to push that kind of momentum of like small squad.
It's just, I just see it. I can see everyone starting to slow down.
You asked me the question repeatedly. And the answer repeatedly is, I would love to have some more options because Nketiah's injured. We have got one striker really. And we've got an attacking midfielder slash striker, Uche, who's our only real option. Could we have had someone benefited to replace Mateta in some of these games? Absolutely, yes. That's what January is for, hopefully.
Fair
probably
enough.
Be too late by then.
Just before we finish then, I did ask all our followers and everybody on X who they thought should have won the game.
I think what this might prove is that there might be more Brighton people listening to this than Palace.
It's not listeners, it's on X, mate. I just tweeted it out to all Palace, all Brighton fans, and the question was, who should have won Seagull Eagle Day? And the votes were Crystal Palace, 27%.
Ah, that's rigged.
Albion, 41%. Draw is a fair result, 32%. So more people, right? So literally everyone, apart from 27%, thought that Albion should have either won or drawn that game. So I thought that's just the people speaking, mate. Look.
Or if you look at the stats another way, 59% of people didn't think Albion should have won that game.
No. That's another way of looking at it.
It's interesting, isn't it, you see? But I'll tell you something now. BBC News, Sky News, all the other big media outlets thought Brighton held in there and played a good game, which is what I believe, but also Palace didn't take their chances. And I think you played a really good game, mate. So the listeners potentially aren't wrong, but I don't think you should have won it. If you'd have walked away with 3 points, it would have been an injustice.
And so Seagull Eagle Day is over. Or at least until February anyway, when we'll have to do it all again.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
That was a long discussion, but it's important, Seagull Eagle Day.
Mate, it's very important, and I can't wait to go to the Amex. I really can't. I've just got to get a ticket now.
Yeah, so. It's currently, I think, it's booked in for beginning of February, so we'll have to wait and see if it gets moved for TV or anything, but at the moment, it's going to be something.
One. I've got a feeling that by the time we get there, that could decide quite a lot, because everything's so close at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. Look, we've talked enough about it. I think we'll wait now and see what happens in February when it comes to it, but for now, I think we need to go back in time. We need to go to before Seagull Eagle Day.
Oh, yeah.
The reason why your players were so tired was because they played Thursday night in the Conference League.
They did.
Do you want to talk us about it?
Yeah. Palace 3, AZ Alkmaar 1. So we got...
You won a game, Andy, at home.
A game.
Well, I was just making the point about Larnaca, and that was all.
Mate, our only blip, yeah. Thursday night under the lights, Glasner made one change to the starting 11 from the win against Brentford the previous week. Will Husey, replacing Kamada in midfield. I think, look, the opening 10 minutes this game was really tight, actually. Both sides trying to kind of create chances. Palace kind of found their rhythm, and to be honest with you, created chance after chance, right?
It was
a free for all the chances. Saar hit the post on 15 minutes. Lerma created havoc from loads of long balls. I think just failed to reach Gehi for that first opener. Then came the big first chance of the game. Pino fed Saar down the left. And basically, it was... Yeah, there was a trading leg from the defender,
right, yes,
a penalty.
Yes, yep.
And bearing in mind, we were sat in the Holmesdale just by the ultras for this game. So we were right in front of the goal, perfect for scoring a penalty. After a really long VAR check.
A really long.
Like stupidly VAR, long. Like
crazy
and this
long.
Game was just ruined by VAR.
This is the European VAR. I've noticed
so
this
slow.
A lot. It does take so
long.
So
slow.
Yeah.
And Mateta stepped up. And I really, like, joke aside, I felt for Mateta in this game because what happened was, he's waiting there for easily 6 minutes for this VAR check to be completed. Mm-hmm. The referee then awards the penalty. The ball's on the spot and Mateta stands there and waits for the whistle to be blown, right?
Yeah, it was a very strange situation.
And then he continues to stand there and wait for the whistle to be blown to the point that he looks over to the ref and he's like, what? And the ref's like, take the penalty, man. And then blows the whistle again.
Yeah, because he did blow the whistle. That's the point.
Mateta not very loud.
No, but he did blow the whistle. Mateta didn't hear it. So he's still standing there. There was this little TV shot you could see that... You saw Mateta, obviously they got a close-up of him because he's just about to take the penalty and he's waiting. He doesn't realise the ref's blown the whistle. And then you just see him take that little look back and the ref obviously just goes, yeah, go on, like I've done it. Like he blows the whistle again and you can see in Mateta, he's gone blank because he's gone, oh, right, quick, I've got to take it.
And at that point, everybody in that Holmesdale stand said he's going to miss it.
Well, yeah, I was saying that
right,
as well.
Because
I was laughing my head off. You could just see it.
Yeah, and I mean, really, really, I mean, it, not an ideal situation with taking a penalty. To be fair, it wasn't the worst penalty that the keeper picked. I mean, Mateta would have scored it bottom left-hand corner and there wasn't enough pace.
That was a good save as well.
It was a really good save, is the truth of the matter. And then immediately after that, Sarr had the next chance with the AZ keeper making another really good save. So that guy's kind of kept him in it. Back-to-back chances there. Munoz crossed the ball in on a really tight angle. Hughes got denied by the crossbar.
Yeah.
So as you...
It was all
like,
going on, wasn't it?
It was a little bit like... I don't know whether you used to play this, and I'm probably about to say something ridiculous, but I used to play World Cup Willy in the playground. Did you used to play
Excuse
that?
Excuse me?
World Cup Willy.
I don't think they can play that these days.
No? Have you heard of it?
World Cup Willy. No.
And it was like you had one goal because you couldn't have both because there was another group of lads playing in the other goal. And it was just like one keeper, two teams, and it was like shots on the same goal. Boom, 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 boom. That's what it kind of felt like.
Okay.
After all of these chances, all the Palace fans were thinking, this can't be Larnaca all over again. Like, complete and utter domination and just not getting anything out of it. And then came the breakthrough we'd all been hoping for. Mitchell headed the ball down from near the halfway line, actually, into the box. And after a really confusing scramble between Gay and Mateta, like the third game in a row this ended up being, where for some unknown reason the ball ends up between their legs and they just can't work out what to do with it. Basically, Lacroix just rocked up and half volleyed it into the bottom left. It's almost like he was standing back watching them two just struggle with the ball between their legs and went, sod this, guys, just hit it.
Hold my beer.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
no, I agree.
Just
it was a lovely
launched
little
it in.
Yeah.
And it was almost, it was a little bit awkward from Lacroix as well, actually. But he smashed it in and it was brilliant. But another VAR check.
Oh,
wasn't allowed to celebrate the goal.
This took even longer, it felt like.
So annoying. And then obviously the goal's good. The goal stood. We all celebrated again. 1-0 Palace. And honestly, the least we deserved out of all of them chances. We could have been 4 or 5 nil up at that point. The game then started to settle down a little bit. More chances came. Two chances for Palace with Hughes and Munoz trying their luck from long range. And then AZ had probably their best chance, which tested Henderson shortly after a little bit. That was really all he pretty much did in that game. Then in first half injury time, Lerma headed the ball into the box. Lacroix flicked it on and Sarr was in the 6-yard box to tap it in. VAR review again, 3 in a row.
A little quicker this time.
But no less frustrating. It was 2-0 Palace. So I think, look, 2-0 up. Going into half time, I think the Palace fans were a bit like, thank God.
Don't forget,
if we'd have not got a result out of this game, that would have changed everything.
I agree.
Three points from nine, you know?
I watched the first half and I sort of turned over after that because at 2-0, I'm like, oh,
yeah,
job done. Like, I don't really want to watch the rest. So I didn't really watch the rest of it. But I did note that the second half didn't quite go as to plan to start with?
I don't know. I think when we came out of the blocks, there was an intent to not sit back and defend it. Mm. There was an intent to get the third. You could really see that. Mateta and Gueye both came close pretty much straight away. The people that were still down in their beers at half-time missed two chances straight off the blocks. But then AZ got a little bit of a hold in the game, a little bit.
Yeah.
I think there was a decent chance, albeit a soft one, where they whipped the ball in the box and we failed to clear it. And then Munoz ended up kind of deflecting the ball from a shot. It kind of gave, truthfully, it gave Henderson no chance. If you imagine the shot came
in, the deflection really made it.
And then Henderson kind of, it was a really weird situation because when it's what people do in a split second, right?
Mm.
So Henderson was about to go and dive and realised that the ball weren't going in that direction.
Yeah.
His reactions were right, but he, for some unknown reason, decided not to use his hands but try and head the ball instead. So he kind of looked like a kipper or something, kind of going upstream.
A salmon,
that's
what you're looking for, isn't it? Yeah.
And it was all a bit weird, but again, this is what happens in the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there we go, very much against the run of play. But yeah, 2-1, and that's what it was.
At that point, I heard it was 2-1. I switched it back on. I was getting excited. I was like, oh, hello.
Brilliant. But I think, look, as the past tells us, when Palace concede at home, it's normally followed by a big volume increase from the fans, which it was, and an immediate reaction from the players on the pitch, which it was. This game was no exception. Mateta controlled a loose ball shortly afterwards, played it into Sarr. And by the way, this is the point, actually. There was a point in every game where you go, that was a lovely moment.
Mm.
That Mateta assist was beautiful.
It was really nice.
Absolute thing.
It really was.
It was perfect.
I never really think about what Mateta's like outside of the box. I always think to myself, he's a striker, you know, he gets his head on things, he puts things away. But actually, the last few weeks, having had to watch Palace a little bit, I've realised that he can really see a pass sometimes.
Oh, mate. And it was wonderful. It really, really was. And as soon as you saw that pass being played, you knew there was a goal coming because that pass was too good to not get something out of it. So he played that pass into Sarr, and Sarr, probably the best way to describe it is, super speeded it, probably. Super speed, past the last defender. And he just, like, cool as a cucumber, slotted it past him. And it wasn't actually that easy of a task, really, at that angle.
And Neil then switched over again.
Oh.
Yeah, that was it. I was done.
I mean, that was his 8th goal in 15 matches at that point. The man is on fire. And I think you guys did really well to nullify him, actually.
Yes, we did. Yes.
On Sunday. then we had a few substitutions. This is another little talking point that I always discuss, because one being Nathaniel Klein in 85 minutes.
Oh, blimey. I didn't even... Is he still there?
Yeah, no, he is. And truthfully, after he entered the pitch, it seemed that the right side of things, the right side of the pitch, felt a little bit vulnerable.
Mm. Well, you've got such a big, strong squad, Andy.
Not there, we don't, is the truth. He, and this is where, it changed a little bit for us, because he got beaten far too easily, two or three times back to back, looks so much slower than he used to be. He hasn't had any game time, really, for 6-7 months now.
Well, I mean, that'll do it for you, though, won't it?
6-7. As the final whistle blew, I was kind of quite happy because I felt like they were overloading us on that side, if that makes sense. Mm. So I don't think Glasner's going to be doing that again, bringing him on. But anyway, 3-1 final score, 3 straight wins, Neil, in all competitions, because I'm looking at the actual stats as opposed to the loaded ones from a Brighton fan. we're now sat, by the way, 9th in the Conference League. Right, we've got plus 3 goal difference. We're level on points with Fiorentina, who are in 8th. So bearing in mind the top 8 auto qualify, right?
Yeah.
So technically we've got the right amount of points to auto qualify, but we're off of it in goal difference at the moment.
So you've played how many games now? 3 games.
3 games.
3 games. Okay.
3 games. 6 points out of 9.
And you play how many games in the league? Ultimately, this first round, like this league status, how many games do you play?
Six. 3 at home, 3 away.
Got it. Okay.
So we got Strasbourg up next. I think, looking at that table and how it's all kind of working out, I think that we are on track to auto qualify. I really don't think there's going to be a problem there. I don't think after losing a game, I don't think we can win it, because I think there is absolutely a team in there that can win 6 out of 6.
I mean, it doesn't really matter, does it? As long as you're in the top three or four, it doesn't matter.
Well, you've got to get in the top eight. That's all you've got to do. You've got to get in the top eight, and then you end up in the top half of the seed. So, and just quickly, if you look at the stats, it's proof again that possession means absolute sod all, right? 35% possession. We had 21 shots to their 9, 7 shots on target to their 4. It was actually a really convincing win, and it was lovely to see. And I thought at the time, a perfect setup for a Brighton grudge match.
Well, look, I'm glad that you did get the 3 points in some respects, because I think it's important for English teams to do well in Europe. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't want you to win, but I'd like you to get to the final and then lose horribly, because that'll help the coefficient and all those sorts of things.
That's
as well.
Nice of you, mate.
That's all right.
How did you get on in the Conference League or the Europa
very
League?
Funny, very okay. Right, what else do we want to talk about before we go?
Oh, look, just a couple of quick things. I think from a Palace perspective, obviously we had the news about the England squad this week.
Yes.
Everyone was eagerly anticipating to find out who made it in.
And who didn't make it in.
And who didn't make it in, more to the point, which we'll get to in a second. So, obviously, Henderson, I don't think there was any doubt that he would make it in, who will be England's number one at some point, every Palace fan believes, will settle for England's number two right now. He's in. Adam Walton made it this time. Bearing in mind, he made it prior and got injured, and then he missed the next one. He is in the squad, which is brilliant. And obviously, Gahey did get called up, and we talked about it earlier, but obviously is now withdrawn due to injury. So that's the three.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that Walton did get in. He's had such a bad run of missing out. I think it is good. From an England point of view, I'm pleased he's in there.
He gives good options.
Yeah, I totally agree. He does in certain games.
All according as to who you play in, as to whether he's the right person to start, but I think it gives the squad good options. And obviously, Welbeck didn't make it.
No, and it's interesting, actually, because the media are usually ahead of stories like this, and they bring up names because they think or they know someone's going to be called up, and that's why they want to do it, to break the story and go, oh, yeah, well, what do we think about Welbeck? And he should be for England and all this sort of stuff. So I was surprised when he wasn't in it just for that reason, because all of the news were talking about it. But ultimately, when you look at the squad as well and what Thomas Tuchel did for this particular squad, he actually only named one striker.
Yeah, it was controversial.
Well, it is, but I think it's because he's looking at other things. He's trying to work out, we've already qualified, and this is his one opportunity, I think, to look at other things and see what he wants to do with all the different many midfielders and number 10s that he's got. He did, however, like, he was asked about Danny Welbeck in his press conferences, and I've got his quotes here. Someone asked him about, you know, how close was Danny Welbeck to being recalled? And he told Five Live, he said, yeah, he was close. I think it's always an option, i.e. Danny Welbeck, because he's a fantastic leader in Brighton and a very special player. He's scoring regularly, and yeah, he was close. He's not out of the picture. He's in contention. We see what he can bring, and it was a close one. We decided on other options. So in other words, he's saying, look, I recognise that he's around and he's about. And I think we've had this conversation a couple of times now. I'm not going to change my mind. I think if Danny Welbeck can just continue with what he's doing, which I think is a tough ask for a man of his age, but if he can continue, I think when we get to the sort of spring and those World Cup squads look a little bigger, because I think that's the option as well that's coming along. I think they might be a 26-man squad. I think then Danny Welbeck is very much in contention to be that third striker. He might not get a game or anything, but he's there just in case.
Look, you never know. You never know. I think having him on the bench to come on and get that ball in the back of the net, I don't think... I mean, even as a Palace fan, I wouldn't be disappointed to see him score for England.
I think
the only thing is, when you're calling people up at his age, it's not really... There's not any longevity in it. There's not any future plan.
But that's Thomas Tuchel, isn't it?
No,
like, he's going for that at the moment. He's going for, you know, like, experience. Well, he's just here for this one contract to try and win the World Cup. So, you know...
Exactly. And then, look, the only other bit of news that I've got, which hopefully will please some Palace fans, which is that there are news from credible sources to say that Adam Walton is currently open in talks for a contract extension.
Oh, that's nice.
So there's nothing to say that he has signed anything yet, but he is mid-talks at the moment.
So basically, Palace just get a bit more money for him when they sell him in the summer.
Well, I think that what we all forget about this whole contract situation, Neil, is that it's all about, like, are you going to commit your future to the club? But, like, don't forget, like, these guys, this is their job, right?
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely.
Like anyone else who works in an office or wherever you work, like, you want to be paid for the job you're doing.
Yep, I agree.
And currently, don't forget, he signed from, was it Blackburn?
Blackburn, yeah.
And he ain't going to be on a great deal of money, and he's not. He's nowhere near the higher earner.
I totally agree. It's about getting what he's worth at the moment for the job that he's doing.
Yeah.
And he's definitely worth more than probably the contract he's on at the moment.
Oh, probably two or three times more what he's on. Yeah. But I think that's the point, which is that I'm hoping the club can do a deal to go, we'll double your wage or whatever it will be. Mm. We'll pay you your going rate. However, let's put a sensible amount in there and make an agreement that you ain't going anywhere this summer, but maybe next summer we can have a chat about it. Because I think he knows, and the media's reporting at the moment, that Palace is probably the best place to continue for him to develop right now. And that making a big move right now might be a season too early for him.
Fair enough.
Let's see.
Fair enough. Okay, mate. Well, look, I think we'll wrap it up there if we can. Obviously, it's the international break now, so we haven't got any games to preview. So we'll be back next week to have a bit of fun, talk about a few things, and obviously preview the games that we've got the following week, which I think Brighton have got Brentford at home and Palace
have got Wolves.
Oh, you're away at Wolves. Yes, that
should
be fun.
We've got a run of games that are pretty much achievable coming
up. Yeah, Brighton have got a little run as well, so we can talk about that next week.
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Just search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
Don't forget, you can drop us an email as well at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you next week. Thank you very much for listening. And until then,
Seagull!
Eagle!
Seagull! Wasn't a dive.
Absolutely wasn't.